Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And we are in the Sunbury Motors Studio, where Mark Brennan will join us in just a few moments. It's always easier to get them into the Sunbury Motors Studio when they literally live one street up from you.
Or worse comes worse, you just yell back and forth.
I mean, Mark and Stacy literally live one street up from us. Now, he has a view of everything from where he is. From his deck, you can see Beaver Stadium, the Jordan Center, the hospital, the entire valley up from where he has an incredible, incredible view.
So that's where we need to go for 4th Fest, for the fireworks.
4th of July fireworks, his home is the home.
There you go.
Meanwhile, here in the poorer section of the neighborhood,
what you're trying to say, what a difference a block makes? Or
running joke with Shane Conlon. Shane Conlon lives in Sewickley, which is where Jack lives, right? And I said, "So Sewickley?" Huh? He goes, "No, I live in the poor section." I'm like, "Oh, the poor section? What? No gates? What? The poor section?" Once you get to know Shane, he's a really, really funny guy. All right, play-by-play call today. Manny Machado, for the first time as a San Diego Padre, finds the seats.
Here comes the 0-2. Machado hits it hard, deep down the left field line. This one's going to go. His first home run in a Padre uniform. Into the balcony of the Western Metal Building. Fitting. A two-run shot. And the lead is doubled. 4-0 here in the seventh.
And the call on the Padres radio network, Manny Machado. It's his first San Diego Padres home run. Well, Bryce Harper's been doing a lot of damage with the Phillies, and I know we're going to talk football and basketball, but Mark Brennan joins us here in the Sunbury Motors studio. First of all, Mark, welcome, and your guy Bryce is getting it done.
No, I was ready to jump off the Ben Franklin Bridge yesterday after the way they blew that game. But no, listen, I'll take it. If somebody would have told me before the season that they'd start 4-1, I think every single person in Philadelphia would have taken it. It was tough to see the way they lost, but it's good to have baseball back in Philadelphia. I think it's good when cities like Philly have good teams, and I think it's good for the sport.
Well, Bryce Harper has a personality that matches the city.
And the fans have embraced him. I mean, it was pretty cool watching him go down to D.C. and that group of fans. The only thing that would have been better would have been had that home run landed in that group of fans instead of over it. My daughter and I were watching it. I was like, can you believe that? That came this close to being one of the most epic homers ever, and it actually would have been better if it wasn't quite as far as it went.
All right. Let's get to a couple things. We'll do this in order. We'll start football, then we'll go to basketball. You've had, obviously, limited opportunities on Wednesdays to get in there. What are you seeing from football and hearing from football and from James Franklin?
Yeah, I mean, I think the positive is the work that the younger quarterbacks are getting, to me. I mean, that would seem to be, you know, obviously Sean Clifford wasn't able to do anything yesterday, but everything we're hearing is that he's looked very good getting most of those first-team reps. And to see a guy like Will Levis step up and get some first-team reps yesterday when Clifford was under the weather, that's good. And even a Taquan Roberson and Michael Johnson Jr., I'm so sure those guys are getting a little bit more. I think the negative is that Tommy Stevens, while he's still able to do some things, and I don't know exactly what, you probably have a better idea than I do, but I know you're limited in what you could say. But I think the negative is that I think it would have been positive for him to have a full, healthy spring. With that said, it wasn't going to happen. We had the ability to talk to him yesterday. He got the procedure done when he had it done before the bowl, so he could at least participate at some level in the spring. So I think it would. I don't think there's any way of sugarcoating the fact that it would have been good to have him in there as kind of the guy or one of the two key guys.
Idealistically, that's absolutely right.
But with having said that, listen, the work that Sean Clifford and the other kids are getting, I think, is big. And I think, you know, one of the things James Franklin touched on yesterday, the D-line, you know, I think a lot of us were probably on the same page with this. When Sharif Miller left, I didn't think that. I thought that was the least impactful of the early departures for the NFL to me. I mean, you could talk, we could argue about the offensive linemen, you know, that's there. But the reason is because I just thought they were so stacked, and they are so stacked. I mean, even without Shane Simmons doing a whole heck of a lot, I mean, you look at what they were running out there yesterday, and we have to be careful. We can't give away, you know, different formations and stuff that we may have seen. They are going to have some pass rush options. I mean, you know, they had a set out there. I'm not going to go into details, but, you know, it included some pretty stout defensive ends and Micah Parsons blitzing. And I'm thinking, my God, that is going to be fun to watch. And he also talked yesterday, Franklin did, about how they're further along at defensive tackle. Because that's when I looked at one of the key guys they lost to me was Givens.
Sure.
He was an unsung hero for them. And I think it sounds to me, I think we all know what you're going to get out of Windsor. P.J. Mustafa is a guy who's on the rise. Mm-hmm. But what we're hearing about guys like Damian Barber, I think, has been a real positive. So those are some of the things. I'm sure I'm missing some stuff. But that, and then, you know, I would also say that the receivers, boy, it's kind of stunning how little depth they have at this point. But I am anxious to see the skill level of the players who are going to be in those positions. With a new position coach, I have a feeling that's going to be an improved position for them overall. You have a dynamic personality in KJ Hamler and Justin Shorter. You know, James Franklin said it yesterday, just scratching the surface. But I had a chance, Steve, to see him at different camps in high school, and I've been saying this from the get-go, that I think he is going to be an elite-level college receiver. It's just a matter of time. He got bumped up early last season in preseason ball. I think he would have been further along, but he's big. People don't understand how big he is. I mean, he's a legit 6'4", if not taller, and 230 pounds, and he runs a 4.44 40. And so he has all the tools, and if you watched him in high school, he just seemed to me to be a more natural pass catcher than Juwan Johnson. I'm not knocking Juwan, very good player, wish him all the luck in the world at Oregon, but he never seemed to be the natural pass catcher. I think that's what you're going to see out of Justin Shorter as this goes along. So I know that's a lot, but those are some of the things that have stuck out to me.
Well, the blue-white game will bring with it basics.
Yeah.
Right. But when you watch the basics out there, what will be some items in your checklist that you'd like to at least see in practical application? I'm talking about personnel, not in scheme, but personnel-wise.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I mean, first of all, you know, all indications are that Sean Clifford knows how to handle himself when he gets on the field, right?
Yep.
I mean, what's his QBR rating, like 600 or something ridiculous? And listen, if not for a drop pass by DeAndre Tompkins in the bowl game, that he would have had some of the most bizarre stats in the history of football. So I think he's going to be fine. I don't think we have to worry about him in the blue-white game. You know what I'm anxious to see is the offensive line. Because
sure.
I think the pieces are in place there for them to have a very good offensive line. They just have a couple of guys, you know, whether it's, you know, it looks, whether it's Thorpe or Miranda, you know, it looks like they may be leaning toward Thorpe at the one guard spot. And I think Rashid Walker is a guy with a gigantic, gigantic upside. But how is he going? That's an adjustment period. I mean, he's a young guy. He's a, you know, redshirt freshman at this point. But a big guy, has all the talent in the world. So the O-line, I'm hoping they play that first team O-line together. So we get a feel, because I think that's one of the real keys coming out of spring ball, is how is that group going to gel? Because you lose a couple of guys who played so much football, but I do think the talent is there. And if slowly but surely, and everybody here who has followed them, you know, we know where that offensive line was depth-wise when James Franklin got here.
Mm-hmm.
And now to see where it is at this point, even having lost a couple kids and losing a grad transfer, you look at the talent there and it's like, wow, you know, now all of a sudden they have some depth. You're looking at a guy like Des Holmes who's on the second team. You're looking at a Miranda or a Thorpe on the second team. You're looking at some, you know, the Wigan kid or Wigum, how do you pronounce his name, the JUCO transfer?
Wigum.
Yeah, he's there on the second team. You're looking at a second team O-line, it's way better than, you know, with all due respect to the walk-ons and stuff who were grinding it out back in the day. So the O-line, to make a long story short, is one area I'll really be looking at.
What kind of read have you had on just the pure athleticism?
Of the team?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting better and better and better and better. I mean, and I think that's evident by, you know, when we go in for the winter weightlifting max sessions every year, and you look up on that big board and see what the different numbers are. I forget who was mentioning it, but it, you know, there was a time where 4.41 or something was the fastest 40. Mm-hmm. And now you look up there, and there's multiple 4.3s, and you know KJ Hamler has yet to run for various reasons. But yeah, overall, I don't think there's any question. I mean, look at the defensive ends. You know, Jason Owe, I think his 40 is 4.4 something. I mean, you are talking about a 6'5", 260-pound kid who is one of the most athletic players on the team. Etor, I don't think people understand what a freak athlete that Etor is, because he ran like 5.45 something, but at they list him at 6'5". If he's 6'5", there's like no way. He's like 6'6". He wears a size 18 shoe, and so it's not just the small speedy guys. I mean, you're talking about big dudes who really, really move, and that's where guys like Micah Parsons, you look in the secondary and you see what kids are doing back there. John Reed was the one who said it. John Reed said, you know, it used to be where if you ran a 4.4, you were one of the fastest guys on the team. Now, if you want to compete for that title, if you want to be on the 4x100 relay team, is the way he put it, you better be running in the 4.3s. And that's impressive stuff. I don't remember them. Maybe the year with LeVar and Courtney Brown. You know, they had some great athletes then, but the across-the-board athleticism, I don't remember it ever being at this level.
Well, let's just shift gears to basketball for a couple moments. Final Four is coming up. We'll get to that in a second. Penn State obviously played well down the stretch. After what was a rugged January, they played well down the stretch. How do you look at the setup for Penn State, especially next year, and when you look at, we talk about age versus youth, they're really only a couple of one-and-done teams. Kentucky and Duke are really the only two, and they both made the Elite Eight. But everyone knows that here older means something. How important is next year with a team that has a little bit more age to it?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, I think when you say a little bit more age, I think that really goes down to the true freshman who played a lot this year. Right. I mean, that's where I think you're going to see the growth. I mean,
The three of them averaged 24 points a game combined.
Right.
And scored three against Minnesota.
But that's my point. You never knew what you were going to get. The disappointing thing, the two, and you know, I'm only saying this because they were veteran guys. But the difficult thing, I'll put it a different way because I like both guys and I don't want to come across as being negative. But to me, the issue last year was the absolute inconsistent play out of Josh Reeves, especially offensively. You never really knew what you were going to get. And we knew the ability that he had, and then you didn't know what you were going to get out of Mike Watkins. Now, it was understandable to an extent with Mike because of the other things that were going on. Lamar Stevens was a rock, man. I mean, you were getting, you know, 20-plus points and 8-9 rebounds every single game, which I thought was amazing given that you weren't getting that from anybody else on the team. Right. So it's one thing. You remember the year when, 2001, when, you know, you had Joe Crispin and Titus Ivory, and you knew what you were going to get from those two guys every single game. I mean, Joe may have a bad game now and then, and that allowed everybody else to do what they did, and that allowed that team to go to the Sweet 16. This team, you only had one guy. So I think that's the important thing moving forward. From all indications, Lamar will be back, which I think is a good thing for him, because I think to round out, I've started watching a lot of NBA now that my beloved Sixers are
relevant.
Sort of relevant. But the one thing that, and I think we may have talked about this, the one thing missing from his game is a consistent three-point shot that will help him translate to that next level. Because I think otherwise, he has the ability to be a 10-year pro. I really believe that. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be a 10-year all-star.
Right.
But I think if you give that guy if he develops a legit, consistent three-point shot, and I'm not saying he has to shoot 50%. I'm saying if he could shoot 37% consistently, I think he has. So that, to me, is why it was important for him to come back and have this, you know, final year. And listen, I'm not sure what Mike Watkins' situation is, but I hope for his sake that it, whatever happens, works out well for him. But I really do wonder if coming back and maybe trying to get things straightened out even further might be of a benefit to him, even though he's going to be 24 years old. So I think looking forward, Steve, to answer your question, stability across the board is the key, not having these ebbs and flows.
All right. With Watkins, the one area about Watkins is this. I strongly feel this has nothing to do with basketball to me at all. It has nothing to do with Penn State basketball. But just my personal opinion, I think it's good for Mike Watkins to be around it here, and he can be taken care of better here.
Could Penn State basketball be part of the solution? I think that's what the key is, right? Nope. Listen, everybody.
And I just said nothing about basketball.
Yeah, but basketball is secondary.
Yes.
But when we're talking about basketball, we can't ignore the fact that he was inconsistent.
He can play,
but
overall,
I think the key is, and I give Pat Chambers a lot of credit, is that he's looked at it this way. Is that let's have Penn State basketball, from their coaching staff's perspective, be part of the solution with Mike Watkins. And I hope it is.
Right. And so we'll see moving forward with that. And also, Jamari Wheeler needs to take 200 to 400 jump shots a day.
Because otherwise, I mean, he's got it all. I mean, not he doesn't have size, but I mean,
all he has to do, Mark, in my opinion, is hit two or three of those in a game. Okay? Did I just say he has to hit eight?
No.
No, 10? No. If he hits two to three a game, now instead of you sloughing off 4 or 5 feet because you're worried about a blow-by, now you have to come out and play him. And if the three-point line does get extended, because this is the rules year, and this is the rules year. I think the two rules I'm looking at would be shot clock, 30 to 20 on an offensive rebound. I think that's going to happen. But you need the software to do it, okay? The NBA already goes from 24 to 14.
Yeah, how about a shot clock that has a tenth of a second on?
I've said that. No. Mark, I've said that. I've said that before, that the shot clock under 5 should be in tenths, all right? The cost from the Ohio State game.
Yeah.
That's something else I've said. And then the other part is I think they might take the three-point line and extend it out.
I wouldn't mind seeing that. And I think that would actually
to the international. It'll be to the international.
Yeah, but still, whatever it is, you know, I think whatever, again, I'll go back to Lamar. I mean, maybe I'm too high on him. I don't know.
No, I think you're spot on about him. I think he's a pro.
If he gets that down, because that mid-range game is something he can defend.
Right.
And, again, people don't understand how big he is. I mean, he's a legit 6'8", but he said he weighed like 225, 230, but he has a muscular frame.
Yeah, he carries it differently than the rest of us would.
Yeah.
And one quick note, if they do extend the three-point line, be prepared for something in the opening month of the season. A lot of guys in the corner being out of bounds.
Ah, yeah. Like, who was the kid from Ohio who was doing that at Penn State all the time, the freshman?
Trey Lewis.
Yeah, remember that? He did it like once or twice a game.
Right. Then eventually, he went to Cleveland State. Then he finished at Louisville. He was terrific at Louisville. I'm like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Jeez. But if they extend it in the corners, not out front, wings or anything, in the corners because it'll be further out, expect more guys going early in the season being out of bounds when they catch it. Thinking they're being, you know, I'm safely behind the line. Well, you're safely behind the line. You're also in front of my bench.
Stepping on my toes.
Mark, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Mark Brennan here in the Sunbury Motors studio. All right, final half hour, Hoops Weiss from Minneapolis. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Baseball scoreboard, the Nationals shut out the Mets today 4-0. The Tigers beat Kansas City 5-4. The Orioles in the bottom of the fifth lead the Yankees 3-1. And in the bottom of the third, the Red Sox and the A's are 3-3. Pirates play the Reds tonight to open up a weekend set. Off day for the Phillies. So that's what you have in Major League Baseball. And, of course, we are your home for the Phillies, led by Bryce Harper. And what a start he is off to. I mean, wow. Dynamic, exciting. That is, I don't think you could script a better start than what Bryce Harper has had for Philadelphia.
That was a great matchup with him and Scherzer Tuesday night. A couple strikeouts, though, to start, but then ended up 3-for-5 on the night. Had the home run in the eighth.
Well, next, in fact, they've got a lot of road games coming up. They're on the road for 10 of the next 13. They have an off day, obviously. Well, this will be starting next week on the road, 10 of 13. But now they've got a six-game homestand coming up off today. And then they've got the Twins coming in tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday. So, tomorrow night will be a 6:30 start. 1:30 on Saturday and 12:30 on Sunday. Then the Nationals are in town on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Then they hit the road for the Marlins. Then they've got the Mets, including a Wednesday afternoon game on the 17th, so that will supersede our show. In fact, that's the only time the rest of this month we get bumped, as a matter of fact. So, they go American League, and then they go National League East for almost the rest of the month until they get the Tigers on April 30th. Everything else is Marlins, Mets. Well, they got the Rockies in there at 1.4. More Marlins, more Nationals. Yeah, got a lot of that going on.
I'll admit, though, I was kind of lukewarm on the McCutchen signing. He's been off to a great start. Michael Franco hitting great out of the eight hole. I mean, how many times has he been intentionally walked so far? More than three times,
right?
Losing count.
Well, exactly. That's why you don't have to bother with the number eight hitter. So it's the National League Baseball. That's why you look in the American League. Let's go back to what, and this is something I've said for a long time. Let's go back to what Tim Kirchen said about Mike Mussina. Pitching the American League to nine legitimate batters every time through. National League gives pitchers that two-batter respite. And the American League, you don't get that break. You don't get that break in the American League. You may face a weaker hitter, but somebody who is a legitimate Major League everyday hitter. But moving Franco down, that's big. The reason moving Franco down is big and helps him out is it. Look, it's taken the pressure off of him. It has taken the pressure off of him. Let's see. Today, at the women's Final Four, Kim Mulkey of Baylor said it's a very competitive environment that the coaches live in. It's impossible or close to impossible to have a reasonable close relationship. But if you weren't coaches and had all these same interests, you'd probably be best friends. Maybe even some of you would be married. Well, they asked Gino Auriemma this, and he said, do you think, and Gino's absolutely right, do you think Tom Izzo has to deal with this crap? I don't think so. I don't think Coach K has ever been asked a question like that at the Final Four. I don't think Dean Smith or anybody else has ever been asked a question like that. I appreciate you asking it, but I think the issue around women's basketball to me that I find a little bit disconcerting is the attention is always taken away from the game and the players, and it's turned on to the personalities involved with the coaches. God forbid one coach is a man and the other coach is a woman. There's always been some kind of friction, tension, and all of that stuff. I mean, he's absolutely right when it comes to this. It's like when you watch a game on TV, a women's basketball game, and they talk more about the shoes that the coach is wearing. He says, who really gives a damn? Really, come on. Let's get over that. We want to be taken seriously. Let's talk about sports. Let's talk about the game. Let's not talk about the other nonsense that's on TMZ. If we want to be taken seriously, let's act seriously. Well, you can't help how it's covered. As you know, Sean, how concerned I've been with how everything's been covered lately. There are some really serious people out there that do some really good, serious work. We showcase them on this show all the time. The people that are really serious about covering sports. We do not have... I mean, there's a certain standard on the show that we have, and the standard that we have in the show is we don't put on anybody that's into the silly. I mean, in other words, they are pros covering it like pros. And they cover not the personality side of it. Maybe there's a question, too, that enters into personality because you have to deal with people. But we talk about the game, about how it's played out. Maybe a personality enters into it because there's a personality of a player involved in it where it makes a difference as to how the game is played. But all this other stuff, all this ancillary stuff that is covered, I know we've got 24 hours, but it's absurd. A question like that at the Final Four? That question like that at a press conference in the regular season is absurd. Now, if you wanted to ask a serious question in that vein, all right, the proper question in that vein is, Gino, Muffet, Kim Mulkey. Look, there are only 353 of you that are coaching women's basketball right now. When you get a chance to talk with one another, because you're the ones that sit in that chair and have to deal with a lot of similar problems, do you get more out of those conversations than you do when you talk to other people? Not saying you have to be close friends or buddy-buddy or anything like that, but let's be honest about it. You know, first of all, there's certain people in the profession you trust and some you don't. But when it comes to the ability to sit there and have a conversation about what you do. Right? And, you know, it's funny because Chris Wheeler and I were exchanging text messages today. Wheels usually gets up here with his buddy Brian to practice. Brian's going to be up here this weekend, but Chris can't make it, which is too bad. Now, we're going to get Chris on the show to talk some football and baseball a couple of times this summer anyway. But, you know, we always go to lunch together when the practice is over with. Talk a little bit, talk about what we saw and so forth, exchange some ideas. But it's always great talking with somebody that does what you do, where they understand all the, you know, I mean, as simple. Everything is simple as you have to read this card at that time because they get what you do. They live it. It's easy for Sean and me to talk about whatever because, I mean, you know, same story. You know, you're dealing with people, you know, of like job mindset. Well, it's the same thing in coaching. You know, you can be a coordinator, or you can be a position coach, or in college basketball, you can be an associate head coach. But the one person who knows above all what you have to deal with on an everyday basis, whether it's dealing with personnel problems, discipline problems, parents, right? And for all of you people who sit back and go, parents? Oh, yes. When you are a college coach, take my word, whether you are Mike Krzyzewski, James Franklin, Patrick Chambers, or David Cutcliffe, you have to deal with parents. Okay? You, take my word, you have to deal with parents. I think that's something a lot of people do not grasp. But the only ones that can understand what it's like to sit in that chair are the people who sit in that chair. They know what your problems are. And that is, to me, that's always been invaluable. When you can talk to people who, where you don't have to explain your job to them. Well, they understand, you know, it's the number of times, like, for example, we were talking about conversations that we have with coaches or managers last year, and how those conversations between the coach and the announcer, or the manager and the announcer, have to stay between the coach and the announcer and the manager and the announcer. It's just the way it is. Sometimes they need you as a sounding board. Sometimes they do. Well, see, Wheels and I could talk about that. Because it's a different role compared to another reporter. Tried to explain that to the suit once. He just, I don't know. Nobody ever talks to me. I said, you wonder why. He's our guy.
Our guy.
Oh, I just got a text from Roger. If we could keep the our guy part quiet, he'd prefer that.
Okay.
All right.
Strike that from the podcast.
Strike that. That's out.
Gone.
But so that's the question you ask Gino Auriemma. That's the question you ask Buffett McGraw. You know, what's it, you know, who else can you relate to? Who do you talk to in the business? Because look, only they can relate to your problems. I mean, not even a high-ranking assistant can really relate to all to what you have to deal with. At least not everything. And that Final Four, I want to say, is in Tampa. As a matter of fact. But, I mean, that's the question. That's why you sit in these press conferences sometime, and this is what you get. I would say two-thirds of the questions are very good expected questions. Okay? You know, they're good questions. They have to be asked, so you ask the questions. Two-thirds of them. That's terrific. You then have, let's say 75%. 75% fall into that category. Right? You get 10% of the questions that are really, really good thought-provoking questions. 10%. And then you have 15% of the questions that are just, you sit there and go, why did you waste the oxygen in the room? Why did you ask that question? Now, you don't want to say anything to them because you don't want to be disrespectful. You don't want to be unprofessional. But you just shake your head and say, why did you waste our time? I don't know. And that was one of those questions. Why did they waste our time? All right, let's take a break. Come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Phillies are on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Swung on. Hit deep, and there it is. Way back to right into the second deck. And the fans get what they want as Harper has hit number one as a Philly.
Phillies baseball on WKOK is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, Turbinville National Bank, Whispering Oaks Vineyard, and WNL Subaru.
Your home for Phillies baseball is News Radio 1070 WKOK.
So A.J. Hinch, the manager of the Astros, who has a world championship to his credit and got to the American League Championship Series last year in defending it, got tossed out last night for arguing balls and strikes. In fact, two people got tossed out, including Hinch. And Ron Culpa, the home plate umpire, reportedly said to Hinch when he was out there, he said, "I can do anything I want." Okay. Hitting coach Alex Cintron, by the way, was also tossed. And not a good look for Major League Baseball. And it's not a good look because there is not a single person on the planet outside of a couple of family members or a friend that went to the ballpark or watched the game last night to watch anybody umpire it. Nobody. I can do anything I want. Nobody came here to watch you. Okay, nobody. Zero. You can't have that attitude, I can do anything I want. And here, but here's another problem, though. And this is a legitimate problem when it comes to officiating. It's not the problem you think I'm about to bring up. You have right now, between the craziness of what's happened in the NFL, I mean, now you can challenge whether it's pass interference. I mean, are you kidding me? Maybe I should challenge whether it's illegal procedure. I mean, come on. You know what they're finding, though? The numbers on who are officials these days on the high school level is going down. Because a lot of people don't want to put up with the nonsense. And I don't want to see the number of officials go down. You know, I mean, we're in an interesting time in sports. And we have, the population is greater than ever in this country. What, about 325 to 335 million people? Yet we're seeing youth participation go down in a lot of sports. Maybe not dramatically, but still the numbers are down. Trying to think, lacrosse is a sport where it's gone up. Most everything else has gone down. Football participation's down a bit. Wrestling participation's down. I think basketball's actually doing fine. But now you're also finding starting to dwindle in terms of people who want to officiate the stuff down on the lower levels. On the lower levels. And I think what we're seeing on the upper level, maybe in terms of perception, maybe in terms of reception, is turning people off. We always like to use the show as a brainstorming session, too. You know, when you get Mike Krzyzewski making a couple statements he made, about how the NCAA should have a seat at the bargaining table with the NBA Players Association, the owners. He's absolutely right. And you need to go in there with a proactive plan. Look, this is what we think. We do so much to develop a lot of your talent along the way, right? Help us help you. So this is what I would put on the table as a possibility. If you want to be 18 years old and graduate high school, we are all for you going to the NBA right away and bypassing college. All for it. But if you go to college and play college basketball, you have to stay with us at least 2 years. Idealistically, I think it should be 3 years. The NFL's 3 years. Baseball, if you opt to go to college baseball, you can go from high school right into the minor league system for anybody. But if you opt to go to college, you can't come out until after the third year. Right? That's baseball. Idealistically, I think that would be a great rule for college basketball. But let's be a little more realistic about it. I'll say 2 years. And the NCAA should have a representative at the table with Adam Silver and the Players Association and say, look, let's work this out. And we're all for 18-year-olds going in now. If you want to be the next LeBron James, you think it'd be great. Oh, and by the way, if you don't get drafted and you want to go play college basketball, we'll take you.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.